KSU Magazine. Thanks to Mary Gelinas from the Cascadia Center for Leadership. Their 2018 Cascadia Center for Leadership program enrollment is open until November 13th. More information can be found at cascadialeadership.org. Donors to KHSU include Eureka's Black Fawn Gallery, presenting the unseen works of Fukiko Oguchi Marshall and Orr Marshall for the month of October. Orr has been showing his works widely for decades, and Fukiko is unveiling her large-scale abstract paintings for this show. Learn more at blackfawnart.com. Donors also include Picky 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 of Eureka, with three stores offering Carhartt and Dickies clothes for men and women, ring and safety gear, footwear, camping supplies, and much more. Open every day in downtown Eureka at 6th and E Streets. They are online at Picky 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 stores. Stay tuned for Art Waves with Wendy Butler.
Thank you for staying with KHSU on your Tuesday, the 17th of October. I'm Wendy Butler, and once again, it's time for Art Waves. Two interviews today. Later in the program, we take a walk down Avenue Q. Humboldt State University Theater, Film, and Dance Department's production of the Tony Award-winning comedic musical is the first fully staged production of 2017-2018, and it opens this Friday, October 20th. First today, a visit with two Del Arte students who've created a performance that's part of the upcoming Del Arte Company and student and guest production, the 2017 Macabre Cabaret. This Friday and Saturday, October 20th and 21st at 8 p.m. in the Carlo Theater, Del Arte, Blue Lake. My guests are second-year Del Arte MFA student Jesse March and third-year MFA student Jacob Timmons. Their work involves the push and pull between two mimes. And we begin with their backgrounds in the study of mime. Jesse is first to respond.
I studied mime in high school and a little bit in my undergrad. And it was something I was really interested in. And we do study, like, mimetic arts at Del Arte, but not, like, necessarily specifically. Like, we study a whole range of movement analysis and body work. I don't know, Jacob, what your work was with mime in the past.
I thought it was fun. So I just did it on my own. I didn't really have any formal training until we got here at Del Arte, and then it started to become a bit more formal.
Well, what attracted you to miming, other than the sort of cliche thing when you see old television shows where they're doing, and of course nobody can see my arms, but they're doing the, where we have the wall, we have a pretend wall, you know, where people actually make fun of miming. But I know that at the amount of discipline it takes for the body to actually do it is...
Well, so I think we do make fun of mime.
We do. That's a little bit of a part of the act is yeah. Making fun of it, but that we still try to do it really well with the discipline of isolation and articulation of the joints, while also wearing black and white striped shirts and white face and just being
very excited about
cliche.
Like, the convention of it. You know, we recognize that there is a stereotype within the, like, what people perceive of as mime, and I think that's how we sort of chose to initially structure the piece. But then as we moved on, we sort of, like, decided, like, how can we break that? And how can we show, like, the entire universe that can, like, be encompassed within this performative technique that's, like, more than just the cliche ideas of, like, the wall, the rope, the ball, whatever.
Which is where the macabre starts to come into the piece, is how can it start out as the classics, the little, you know, very cliche mime, and then how can it dissolve into something very real and a little bit terrifying for the macabre cabaret.
And that's something I think that's exciting about mime, is that the study is of, like, real forces and of real things. So when you see the cliche of the wall, actually thinking about it, it's how does the body relate to the imagined reality of a wall? And then how does that then expand? So like if you, like the wall is a very simple concept, but then how does that move on, or how does that shift or change, you know, if the wall changes, or if you know, the world starts expanding?
Let's talk about the piece that you're doing. Does it have a title?
It's called The Best Mime.
That makes sense.
The best, but there's only one best mime.
Is that the story? Is it about a competition of some sort?
Yeah, it's the piece is introduced as the best mime, and two mimes come in thinking that it's them, and then see the other person and are like, why are you here? I'm the best mime. This is my time to do mime.
But they don't speak.
All told through body language.
And so is somebody directing you, or you directed yourself?
We directed ourselves. It's all completely self-created, self-worked, self-made.
Well, how do you do that? Direct yourself? You have to tell the other person, like, say, Jesse has to tell Jacob to stop there. You have to do this now because it's not working. I mean, how is it? Because you're both, there's nobody, you're both stirring the pot.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. With two people, it's a little easier. We came up with the idea together, and then we have a discussion about what it looks like. What's the arc of it? How we think it will go, so that we can eventually, you know, maybe this, maybe that. I don't know. Maybe this won't work. Until we agree upon what the arc of the thing looks like, and then we go into a studio. And we start working with it. And then it's just more discussions along the way of, well, maybe we need to look at this piece a little more, this part of it, because this isn't quite reading very well. It doesn't look real. And then we can go back and forth on that.
And that's, I think, the most exciting aspect, is that there is no necessarily like wrong or right in the creation of a thing in the way that we work. It's more about like saying, well, what was your intention in making this motion or making this moment? And then does that then translate in the person who's watching it as to the reality of what that is, the impression that's received? So and we were actually very lucky, like Jacob and I work really well together. We sort of like popped this piece up in like less than the space of a week, because we had a really crisp, clear image for what it was. And then we worked through the idea of what it was. And the concept kind of like developed around this image, and then the idea, and then we designed the end to look like what we were kind of imagining. And that was a really exciting process to go through collaboratively, and luckily it happened so quickly.
The cabaret is divided into lots of different scenes or lists or different skits or however you want to call it.
Yes.
And they all are macabre.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In this venture.
Well, and are they macabre because they are creepy or gruesome or...
Yes.
Or violent or...
All of the above. All They're Halloween-y.
Halloween-y.
That was the idea.
Yeah, they're not necessarily all scary. Some of them are funny. Ours is
more funny. On the funny side.
Although the first time we performed it, we did get a couple of like, oh my God, reactions.
Really?
Just because it does get, it's macabre. It's for the macabre cabaret. But yeah. So there's some of them are spooky. Some of them are creepy. Some of them are funny, but they all fit within this kind of gruesome, violent, creepy feel.
And they kind of clip along too. So there's a saying in cabaret, which is like a series of skits like strung together with a host, that if you didn't like this, just wait 5 more minutes and then you have a whole new thing. And like we built it like around the theme of the macabre and like sort of for Halloween, but it could be about anything. It could be about, you know, romance, or like it could literally have no theme and it's just a bunch of things strung together that have just the relationship of being short, sweet, and, like, exciting.
Jesse March and Jacob Timmons. Their piece, titled The Best Mime, is part of the 2017 Macabre Cabaret, presented by the Students, Guests, and Dell'Arte Company. The shows are Friday and Saturday, October 20th and 21st, at 8 p.m. at the Carlo Theater, Dell'Arte, Blue Lake. For more information and tickets, you can visit dellarte.com or you can phone 668-5663. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. Humboldt State University's Department of Theater, Film, and Dance presents the comedic musical, Tony Award-winning, Avenue Q, opening this Friday, October 20th, and continuing Saturday the 21st, and then the following Friday and Saturday, October 27th and 28th. Showtimes are at 7:30 p.m. And there will be two matinee performances beginning at 2 p.m. on Sunday, October 22nd and 29th. All performances are at the HSU Van Duzer Theater. The play is directed by Associate Professor of Theater Arts, Ray Robison, with musical direction by music faculty member Elizabeth Harrington. You might call this play a coming-of-age parable, however, what makes it truly unique is its use of puppets as its lead characters, who act alongside human actors. My guests are HSU students Liz Whitmore, who performs the role of Lucy, Victor Para, who is Nikki, William English, who is Rod. And also here is the play's music director, Elizabeth Harrington. I have to start with the puppets because before we started recording, Liz was saying, and I wanted her to elaborate on this, or perhaps several of you, this is a kids' puppet show, but it is adult material.
Yeah.
But it's a kids' puppet show. What does that mean? We're not seeing a puppet show.
Yeah, it is a puppet show, though. It's like a television show in a sense. They're putting on an act. Everything is in the purpose of teaching you a lesson. They want to teach you about life, how life really is out there after you graduate from college. And so it's teaching you that in this specific format of a kids' puppet show.
There's a stripper puppet.
That's me.
So you're a stripper puppet. How do you work that as your character? Because how is
the challenge, doing Lucy the slut while still keeping in mind the fact that this is a kid's puppet show. It's definitely an interesting balance. It's hard to describe in words because it's hard to do. So I don't know exactly what to tell you there.
So all of you are puppets?
Oh, that's correct. Hi, I'm Rod.
Oh, so I totally did not, I understand so much better now. So you are puppets. The idea of a puppet is your vehicle.
Yes. So we have puppets made from one of the designers for this show, and some of them are two-handed puppets like Trekkie Monster, while as most of them are just one stick puppets. So instead of using two rods traditionally to mimic both hands, one of them is stationary, while the other one we have full movement with, and the other hand, depending on if you're left or right-handed, is operating the mouth of the puppets.
So you are in character, but you're also operating puppets.
Yes.
Or you're operating puppets through with you're projecting your character.
Yes. So we are the character, except we have to remember each and every time that we have to project it onto the puppet itself. And so, you know, we have to work around that. In that aspect.
Well, let me go into Victor. You are playing a character called Nikki.
Yeah, that's me.
So, Nikki, what you're trying to make it on your own?
Yeah, you know, what can I say? You know, students get into debt after college, and I didn't get a job like all my other friends here on Avenue Q. But yeah, I just kind of roam around with each and every person I can and lets me stay on their couch every once in a while. You know, it's pretty depressing, but that's my life. Yeah.
Sounds like it sucks to be you.
Yeah, well, you didn't want to sleep with me, so it's okay. Yeah.
So, Lucy, am I speaking to Lucy the slut now?
Hi, yes, you are.
Well, why? How did you manage to get a nickname like that?
Well, you get around. That's how you get it. Lots of people, lots of nicknames.
And is this how you're making it on your own?
One could say that, you know. Sex is great. What can I say? It's making it for sure.
And Rod over here, William English, your character of Rod.
Yes.
What is Rod's story?
Well, he's actually this is an interesting topic because out of everyone on Avenue Q, Rod seems to have the most put-together life for the most part. I mean, he has a steady job, good paying at that. He's an investment banker. But he is struggling with some internal issues that you really see throughout the play that he struggles with. And it's sort of this journey of him realizing who he is and being able to accept that.
And all of these characters, you, the actors, are performing all of these characters while operating some type of puppet.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we as actors are always supposed to be looking at either our puppet or the actor we are talking to's puppet. So no actors are making eye contact unless they're playing humans and do not have a puppet. So, yeah.
And there are actors involved in this production who are just humans.
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What is your Elizabeth?
I was going to say, so there are three of those.
Three of those who are just humans. So how do you, what is your understanding of why the people who have created this production wanted to have the actors operating puppets while being the character of the puppet rather than the puppeteer?
You can take
it. You
can take
it, yeah.
Well, so there are many theories, but one of the reasons that we talk about is because if we're watching puppets rather than real people, it gives just a greater license to do things. For example, puppet nudity versus human being nudity, that's, we can kind of put that in a separate category and put that on a stage, on college campuses or community theater, wherever it is. And the other thing is there's so many other issues apart from just this, journey into adulthood after college, this young adulthood, it explores racism and, gender identity, sexuality, Schadenfreude, all these issues, taking pleasure at the pain of others, that, these things that, that can come up from time to time where we're wrestling with these issues and taking it out of the strictly human realm and putting into the puppet realm, lets us explore that in a way that's freer, but I'd love to hear what you all think about that because you're up there doing it.
Yeah. Do you feel freer?
I would have to agree with that. I mean, you get to be someone. Not only as an actor, you get to be someone else, but especially with the puppets, you have so much more room to work with and you're allowed some free movements in a sense, certain actions that you wouldn't do as a human being versus while being a puppet. So that's a positive thing. I think
it can roll back into, those classic shows of Sesame Street, growing up with these puppets, but not just the puppets. I mean, because it's also the puppeteers operating them, right? They bring these characters to life in a way that we can connect with because it's so open, it's not reserved in any fashion, and that's exactly what this play is. It's not reserved in any sense, if I would put. So we can take liberties with that and really express the ideas that we're trying to bring up without any hindrance.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I was thinking while all of you were talking, because I was also thinking that I wasn't properly asking my question, but maybe if I throw this out here, this will give you an idea of what I'm thinking about, and also based on reading about the play. You, as children, all of us, not all of us, some of us, we grow up with an ideal sense of what could be, what our possibilities are when we grow up, when we mature. And a lot of us were raised on PBS. And through that, you, of course, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, of course, and Sesame Street, everything is possible. You can do, you are special, right? You are special. You can do
special.
Anything. And the puppets tell you this. And so we grow up, and now you're still saddled with a puppet, the puppet that represented what was idealism. But now it's different because the puppet is kind of dark. The puppet is dark now. The puppet is becoming more of an albatross even. And you have to operate it. You have to try to make it ideal again. I don't know. That's what I was thinking about when you were talking about having to maneuver and manipulate these puppets.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also an interesting aspect to bring in on that note that unlike, you know, even characters on Sesame Street or the Muppets, they all have their flaws at times that they try to go through together. And just like in Avenue Q and just like real people, we all have problems that we're trying to go through and we each deal with them in a different way. And that is shown in this production. And I think that's what it's really about, is that not everything is so perfect and that there are things wrong in the world, but it's just a matter of how we perceive them and how we deal with them. Like the idea of, do I have a purpose in life? What is my purpose? Do you need to know, or can you just go on living?
Whoa, that was deep.
That's song number 4 called Purpose.
Elizabeth Harrington, music director for HSU's production of Avenue Q, which opens Friday. Also here are actors Liz Whitmore, Victor Parra, and William English. This is a good time to talk more about the songs and the music. And Elizabeth, I'd like you to lead talking about this because you're the music director. You're also performing in the Pitt Orchestra.
That's right. It's a lot of fun. We got a chance to work through Act 1 and Act 2 this week with the cast and the band for the first time. So it was really great for them to hear each other, you know, and how the music is going to punctuate you know, the band will punctuate the words that the cast is singing. And just right off, I mean, it's such a fun set of sounds. I mean, the sound spectrum is just delightful. We have things coming through the electric keyboards like harmonica and banjo and tuba and, you know, just really, really crazy, funny sounds that just make you giggle when you hear them. So that's a lot of fun. But a lot of these songs are really blatant. I mean, so at the beginning, as we were speaking, you noticed as I opened the book here, the first thing that came open was a song called "The Internet Is for Porn." So, I mean, there's not a lot of what's the word? I don't want to say subtlety because there is subtlety, modesty, but also like Will was saying, you know, everything is explored. We're not holding back. There's no reservation. So the songs just blatantly say what they are. So there's a song entitled "If You Were Gay." Mm. There's a song entitled "Purpose." A song entitled "Internet Is for Porn." I'm not wearing underwear today. And then like what you were mentioning about Special, I mean, Lucy the Slut, the name of her song is
Special.
Right. And you can make somebody feel special even when they feel like
yes,
nobody.
I can.
Exactly. And so it's just really blatant in your face, you know, kind of the way Sesame Street is presented, because you don't have to guess at what the message is. There's a message in every song, and it is right there, readily accessible. I mean, there's one.
And that's
called,
how a kid's show would be, so you don't
exactly
miss the point.
Yeah. Right, it's right there. One of my favorites is "Fantasies Come True," and I don't want to give too much away, but it's just, you know, if people are exploring, if their fantasy were to come true, what would that be like for them? And so, right, exactly. And you know, a song called "Schadenfreude," you know, sung by a character by the name of Gary Coleman. And if you remember from, you know, popular television culture, Gary Coleman was a child star who then.
Well, I forgot the name of the show.
Different Strokes.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yep. I grew up on that show. And then, you know, his life didn't follow the path that was kind of set up when he was a child through all sorts of reasons, you know, mismanagement of funds. And then his career just didn't, you know, go anywhere after that. And so it becomes a tragedy in a sense. And in fact, you know, after Gary Coleman's death, the dialogue was rewritten within the play and they kept the character. But just, you know, so there's a lot of sadness there too, but none of it is hidden. It's just really in your face. Like you say, Liz, just there's the message and you take it right there. So. Yeah, but musically, it's just a ton of fun and surprisingly beautiful in spots. It's not all these, you know, happy, fun, or, you know, a lot of them are sort of, you know, with driving rock beats. So a lot of it's upbeat. But there's a piece entitled "There's a Fine, Fine Line." And the lyric goes on to say, "There's a fine, fine line between love and a waste of your time." And it's a really, you know, disappointing. It captures right there in that one line what so many people, you know, struggle to you know, come to terms with or you know, really figure out.
I would say that's a fine, fine line.
Yes, exactly. So it's incredibly clever. The lyrics to the songs are wonderful. You know, the dialogue is wonderful. And the music is just what's the word? It's so well connected to the drama. A lot of back and forth, a lot of what's called underscoring, where the actors will say lines and there's a musical punctuation that goes with them, whether or not it's within a song. So it's a ton of fun to work on.
And the characters interact like in song and in story, because we haven't even actually touched on the story. Is there a story?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Is it too much to give some of that away? Victor?
Yes. I don't want to give too much away, but I would just have to say that there's the main message with Avenue Q, which is, yes, this is how it really is for the majority of people who do go to college and grow up to be, you know, not what they wish to be or what they were taught that anything was possible, right? But not only the big message, there's little other stories involved. For example, sexuality, in this case, is brought up. And so I think it's very interesting in terms of how Avenue Q presents that. And so, like I said, I don't want to give too much up, but sexuality would be one of the issues that we deal with in this musical, yes.
What does Q stand for? Or is that giving too much away if we...
No.
I mean, I don't want to assume it stands for any one thing.
Well, if you live on Avenue A, that's you've made it.
Oh, man, yeah.
Avenue A is where the rich, well-to-do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, if you're on Avenue Z, forget it, you know. Yeah. But so they're on Q.
Spend too much time there.
There you go. But it has a nice ring if you think about that. I mean, if you look at the icon also of the show, it's fuzzy, you know, which kind of is evocative of the puppet fur or the monster fur, which is another thing that runs through. And we've touched just ever so slightly on some of the themes, one of which is racism. And they use the puppets to sort of, you know, get at this issue of racism. Some of the puppets are monsters. Some of them are not. And so the comment is made, what do you think all monsters look alike kind of thing? And so it's getting at these issues of racism in our society in kind of a, quote, safer way, a way that we can laugh at and maybe gets people to think about the issues and talk about them openly rather than, you know, immediately becoming either defensive or just wanting to not listen. So it's a really interesting combination of, you know, make you laugh, children's puppet show, and then issues that are so important to society right now. So.
Oh, I wrote laughter with a question mark. Okay. This is a comedy? Is it a comedic musical?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so it's delivered that way. You deliver that way with your performances, like your pace. You deliver it.
Because we do have moments where it's more sentimental, you know, more down to earth, more real moments, human real moments. But for the most part, yes, it's more upbeat, a comedy, and it's based on that. Yes,
mm-hmm. The music plays into that as well, right. Of course.
Liz Whitmore, Victor Pera, and William English, actors, and Elizabeth Harrington, music director, and orchestra pit performer as well. The musical is Avenue Q, and it opens this Friday night. It continues performances this Saturday, the 21st, and then the following Friday and Saturday, October 27th and 28th. Showtime is at 7:30 p.m., and there will be two matinee performances beginning at 2 p.m. on Sunday, October 22nd and 29th. All performances are at the HSU Van Duzer Theater. Letting you know that this Saturday, the 21st, and the following Friday, the 27th, there will be a pre-show talk at 7 p.m. And after each of those performances, there will be an opportunity for an open dialogue with actors. For tickets to Avenue Q, you can phone 826-3928 or you can visit centerarts.humboldt.edu. And for more information, you can call 826-3566. And that's it for today's program. Please join me again next Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. You can also listen to Art Waves anytime online at khsu.org. Art Waves podcasts are available for download from iTunes. Until next time, I'm Wendy Butler. Thank you for listening.
Bebop, the cool school, hard bop, 60s blue notes, the young lions, if it's straight ahead,